Okay, folks, welcome back. We're going to get started on the afternoon session. And first up this afternoon is Ewan McVicar. Delighted to have Ewan here. Ewan's going to talk to us about the Schools Disability Project. Ewan is a songwriter and a musician. Ewan.
I was asked to be part of the group who thought about organising today. And I said, how about doing a CD of songs of Scottish coal mining, because no one has done that. They appear on other people's records, but with other songs from elsewhere. And then I got to, and Nikki here said, well, there was maybe a chance through Cisco to help and turn that into more and get information out to the miners' welfare. But I said, well, how about doing a book? And I said, well, my biggest problem is there are not a shortage of songs about Scottish coal mining, and make sure you get a copy of the book that's up the back there, free, and the CD. But not many of them talk about disability, and I couldn't find any, except one modern one by Anne Renshaw, who will probably be along a little later this afternoon, about disability and coal mining specifically. So I said, well, what can we do about that? And I just thought, and I said, well, how about if I go to a couple of schools and we write songs, and I tell them and give them information about coal mining and disability in Scotland, and we write some songs about that. And that's what we did. And also we did the artwork. You'll see there's some artwork up behind you, just up there, and more on the table up the back, which is their illustrations of their songs and about the things they had learned about coal mining. And these were two coal mining communities. One of them was Green Rig, which is right beside Paul Kemmett Colliery. And the other one is East Pleen Primary, which is in the village of Pleen, where my mother's father was a coal miner, and I had all his stories and used to love them. So I'm going to give you a taste of some of the songs and to talk about the words and the kind of the ways and why, how we link these in together and how we found stories inside accounts in terms of material which was sent to me by other people on the advisory group. So this first one, you might say, what are these sound effects? If you're working with kids and you write songs with them, and the idea, by the way, is if you're really struggling, might be as much as 60% your song and 40% the kids. If you're doing well, it's going to be 20% your song and 80% the kids. But at the same time, it's certainly going to be old tunes, because I'm a great believer in using old Scottish tunes rather than writing new ones of various quality. So, the first one, just thinking about this, and again, you think, where did your stories come from? It says, my dad coughs all night. He wakes me up when he starts to wheeze. He says he's got black lung disease. My dad coughs all night. That was the first verse played, but here it goes on like this. If I can get to work.
My dad coughs all night. He wakes me up when he starts to wheeze. He says he's got black lung disease. My dad coughs all night. One man fell one day. Ow! A hatch came along and took his legs away. So he lies in bed with lots to say. Grandad fell one day. Ow! My mom works very hard. She cooks and cleans and she washes the clothes and hangs them in the back that clean red rose. My mom works very hard.
You're going to have difficulty hearing the words, because these are not professional singers. They could have given you a nice recording of me and a guitar singing it sweetly, but this is just done in the classroom with them, and them wanting to say, well, first being wheeze, and saying wheeze rather than wheeze, because you don't know what the word is, but we put it in, because it better ring the rhymes with disease, so you find it, and they're doing cough, ah, and they're doing things like, granddad fell one day, ow, a hutch came along and took his legs away, so he lies in his bed with lots to say. And we had a wee debate. Now, should we say with nothing to say or with lots to say? And the vote was for with lots to say. And as you might think, because it could be that he was just lying there, but, you know, it doesn't stop you being true. Mama works very hard. She cooks and she cleans and she washes the clothes and hangs them out the back at Pleen Red Rose. Mama works very hard. Sigh. Very appropriate. And my sister works at the table. She picks out coals, so she's got a bad back. Stone hits her fingers and her nails turn black. From a story in one of the books I was reading, an old woman, some oral history account, saying when you worked at the table, it had, you know, you damaged your nails. You couldn't have nice nails because you're picking the stone up and you would get bruises and that kind of thing. My auntie pushes a hutch all the way to the top of the bing. She cries going up, coming down, she sings. My auntie pushes a hutch. Again, coming from oral history and from the accounts of the 1842 research accounts when they were thinking about whether women should be working down the pit. And there were accounts of that, women climbing up ladder after ladder after ladder with so much coal and stone on their backs that they couldn't lift it up on their backs themselves. So their husband would, because it was a family business, or their father helped them to load it, and they would cry with the effort going up. But when they were coming down the ladder, they sang. So just lifting that idea and putting it in, tying it together with someone pushing a hatch. My great auntie Mary, who lived in Plain, when she was, this would be 1914, 1915, she had a job at the pit head. And her job was when, and three other girls, I think there were two other girls, when a hutch full of stone was ready to go up to be tipped over the top of the bing, they pushed it up. Pushed it all the way up, and then kind of ride down if the brake was safe enough to ride down again. And I'll bet you they sang coming down, but I'll bet you they didn't sing going up. So again, tying together a story from my family, a story I'd held from elsewhere, what's there in the books and in the accounts or in the photographs that we find. My brother hews the coal. Sometimes a splinter goes into his eye, but he has to be big so he never cries. Talking about eye injuries, and in fact, the kids really got into that. So you'll find two or three illustrations with their eyes with things sticking out of them. Also, there's a picture up there which has got somebody who's only got one finger's gone. Now that was, again, the next one I want to look at and tell you about and how you can. That song about my dad coughs all night was from East Plain. East Plain Primary 7, so that was, they were 11-year-olds singing there. That's the school that my mother went to, that my uncles who were, again, someone said this morning, I think it was even saying that someone had been told, the father said that the sons would not go down the pit, they might work at the pit head. Ian was yourself was in that, yeah. Same thing, my grandfather, my uncles, none of them went down the pit. Because he said, if you try to go down the pit, I'll break your legs. You're worth more. You could do something there. You only do it if you can't do anything else, was the line that he had. Except that my uncle Huey, he went down the pit when he was 8 to take down my grandfather's lunch. He'd left his piece at home. And he went down and was sent out into the darkness walking along in 1924 or 25, this was, away along the pit, underneath the ground to deliver it, and finding his father lying on his side, hacking, undercutting, in his vest, in his trousers, in a pool of black water, cutting away at it. And that was the only time that he ever went down the pit. So I use these kind of stories with the kids and see how we can get songs out of them. In fact, in 1922, my grandfather was down his plane, well, I think it was shaft number 3, and he heard a thump. And he said, "What's that?" And the guys working with him said, "That's the pit going up, Hughie," but it was actually the shaft next door. And they took 12 men dead out of that. Their holiday bags were, there was the last shift before the summer holiday. And their holiday bags were waiting at the pit head for them to go off on holiday immediately as they came out of the ship, but they didn't come out, some of them, their bags just sat there. But the grimness, the horror of all these stories are powerful, yeah? So how do you find another way into it? Because you don't want to keep depressing kids all the time. So we said, let's have, and this is another thing that excited the kids, the stories at work. You get the stories and you go, what did they do with the dynamite that they were keeping? Some of them just kept it under their beds. They bought it in quantity from the company store because it was a better price and stored it under their beds. So the beds could be a pile of dynamite. I can imagine how that idea amazed the kids. So we said, let's make one. This is Hamish McDougall was a miner. Underneath his bed was dynamite. His work made his clothes and face coal black. The opposite of Snow White. You know, what? Snow White coming into the thing? And that's because you look up a rhyming dictionary, rhymes for dynamite, and you find Snow White. Ah, we'll put that in. So the rhyming dictionary is a very useful way of getting ideas. One day he went down into the green rig cage, and into the darkness he dropped. It clattered and it rattled and it crashed, crashed, crashed. He thought it would never stop. He went in through the tunnel to the Bunbury Dook. The school down below is Bunbury is down below there. And he drilled a hole into the rock. He filled it full of dynamite and lit the fuse, and it blew up with a mighty shock. The smoke and sharp shards flew at him and chopped his finger off. The smoke and the damp and the afterdamp, sorry, the smoke and the dust and the afterdamp gave him a really bad cough. So we're getting all these things about disability into the information that we're piling into our story. He shouted for help, and his brother heard and came to rescue him. Hamish said, "My finger's off. See, can you find it, Tim?" Tim looked around over the ground, but it was lost in the dark. So Hamish was called Four Fingers, and he said it had been eaten by a shark. We could play a wee bit of it. Let's find the right number. Four Finger Hamish. Number 16.
Wee Willie Wallace, he was wrong number, very tall, and when it
down in the pit of the miner's coal, the garden nails out on the mule.
This is a different song again. Screw me, folks. I thought I'd, you wouldn't believe that I should know what the numbers are of these, but I don't.
Here comes the cavalry. Here.
I'm very alarmed to find that these tracks are not the same as they should be on this.
Hamish McDougall was a miner.
Not singers.
Underneath his legs lay the lights. His work made his clothes and his face coal black. The opposite of all so white. One day he went to the green bright cage, and down in the darkness he dropped.
You can tell we are not, we haven't rehearsed the song particularly strong, but we're proud of making. The important thing about these recordings is it gives the kids voices. I could cheerfully have recorded it differently, but the words is what we need, and we put them in there. Another song that we made was, came out of a story again. And it's funny how these things come around, because it said, let's make a song about what it, when the kids worked down the pit up before 1842. And what would you have to learn if you're going to be 10 years old and you're going to learn, you're going to be sitting in the dark opening and closing a door to let the tuttle go through the herd, the what do you call it, the herd? There were different names in different parts of the country, weren't they? When they would be hearing one coming, you let it go through, shut again, or you're opening and shutting it to get the ventilation working. So we took a song and we said, tomorrow is your birthday and you're 12 years old, time to leave the school and get down to the coal. My grandfather left school at 12, but the work is hard and boring, and you must be told, so you'll be a caw canny miner. You sit in the darkness to open a wee door, listen for the hutches, you can hear them roar. As they roll down the rails, piled full of ore, you'll be a caw canny miner. The next week I went back in, but before that I was having a look about a book about Clean. And I found that in 1842, a boy called John Allen had been interviewed, and he had started down that pit at the age of 10. So it became John Allen's story, and John Allen's song. So we added in more information. You get up before the sun, get on your work boots. If you're friends with a pony, talking with kids all, the story of the pony is a very important one. Friends with a pony, dinna let it try to eat all your dinner as it goes by. You'll get hungry, time to cry, you'll be a caw canny miner. And various miners have said to me how clever the ponies were. They could open your peace box with just their lips and get in and get your peace. So you had to make sure you put a lock on it, and that was important. So a lot of them, watch the canary, if it flops, time to run and never stop, because the black tank's coming to make you drop. You'll be a caw canny miner. I'll give you a taste of if I can find it. I'm sorry that the numbers are all over the place here, but we'll see what we can get.
Wee Willie Wallace, Bosnia.
Again, you say, well, we've only got one shot at it to record it, and we're not learning the tune very well. Let's make it more of a recitation. And that turned out to be more atmospheric than if we'd been trying to sing the song. And in fact, again, we sing about Green Rig. I don't know if you know where Green Rig is. It's on the very edge of West Lothian and the very beginning of, I think, is it South Lanarkshire or Renfrewshire? I'm not sure which. Which means there's a line through the middle of it. So one half of the village is called Green Rig and the other half is called Faldhouse. And it's just down the middle, and you think, what goes up if you cross over? And the pit of, what name was the pit? Pob Kemet, was known as the Dardanelles because it was being sunk in 1916 when the Dardanelle campaign was on, First World War we talked about this morning, and it was hard to win. And they said, this is as hard to win as the Dardanelles. We'll call it the Dardanelles. And it was known as that and is known as that. And it's out in the Muir between Green Rig and Whitburn. So Whitburn's here, Green Rig's there, and Paul Kemet's in between. There's a park there now in the old way of these things. And again, many types of dangers are lurking in the darkness. Know them or die, a miner must learn. Learn about black damp. It comes creeping, sneaking, into the mine. You don't know it's there. If you get happy, then you get dopey. Gas has come to choke you. Be aware. So it's telling the story from the research that I've done. I've got notes on it, given to them. And sometimes these verses were made by different small groups. It used to be we sat in rows and looked at the teacher when I was a lad. Nowadays they sit at tables and they work together in their small groups, very often in the primary schools. So it's inviting. You guys, will you write about that bit of it, about black damp? You guys, will you write about fire damp, which is different? You guys, will you write about white damp? So we have a verse, so we have a song which has got black damp, about fire damp, it blows up. Then after the explosion will be damp and white damp, and that will, there's no oxygen left, so you run for it. So it's kind of, but, and then I go around and say, right, I've got a verse for it. I'm the polisher, I'm the editor, and I say, well, can you put that bit there and that bit there, and can you think of a rhyme? What rhymes with, there, be aware, right, we'll get that up. Shut, undercut. Ah, when you undercut, there's a technical word. Let's get some technical words in. And kids are very pleased when they learn a technical word. It's like a secret language. So these songs, a miner must learn, and becomes exactly that. Several of the children went and asked at home, because I was with them over about 4 weeks, writing songs, and we did a couple of songs over the course of the 4 weeks. But some of them had gone home and found that they had grandfathers who had been miners. They didn't even know it. Really, if you say to them to begin with, they've no idea. Someone was saying to me during the break that you have to say to them, this is a pit. What's a pit? Why is it there? This has got coal. What is coal? For most of the kids, some parts of the country you'll get them, excuse me, I know you're in behind the camera there. Is that okay? Right. Because you bob up and down so you can, I can see your face and you can see mine. That the background of why this happened for me was exactly my grandfather was a miner. And I had the stories, and he told me, and he was so became so deaf, I could never say, you already told me that story. So I got to hear them 20 times, which is how I was able to put them together into a song and to make them. But I have been in maybe 50 schools in Scotland over the years, and in one or two other countries, writing songs with kids. And we've written a lot of good stuff, but I honestly have to say that the ones which have had to do with coal mining have been closer in terms of quality. And one of the ones is, I was saying, in 1922, there was the coal explosion in East Plain Pit. I went back, not as part of this project, but at the time, it'll be about 20 years ago, I went to that primary school in East Plain with the primary six class and told them the story of that pit disaster from my grandfather's stories and then from what I'd researched in the newspapers. And we wrote a song. And I'm very proud to say that other people sing that song. And Siobhan Miller, who's sung here and will be singing again on Monday or Tuesday, yeah? She's singing the song of the coal mine. And I'd like to play it to you because I'm proud of it. And we'll find the number for it if I'm lucky. Now, in theory, it's number 22. But the numbers are going a wee bit different here from what I'm doing. There's a one, for some reason, this machine has a number on. So if you want 22, you've got to put in 23, I think. But we'll find out.
When I was a laddie, a 12-year-old.
Yep, yep.
Mother said I could not have a collier. If I did, it would break her heart. I didn't care what my mother told me. I had a collier for my sweetheart. But one day up Catcher's Lone, a siren screamed in Pit Forehead. All of Blaine ran to find out how many living, how many dead. Losing time in the Carbrook Duke, the young shot fired his shot. Dynamite blew up the section. 12 much dead, 17 caught. Their holiday bags were lying waiting. The men were lying down below. The wee canaries, they died too. Salty tears in the sad red moon. The young shot firer had no certificate. My young collier gave his life. Fate was cruel to my sweetheart. I will never be a wife. My mother said I could not have a collier. If I did, it would break her heart. I didn't care what my mother told. I had a collier for my
And I'll finish with one plea again, the song that I started off with, My Dad Coughs All Night, just the way that the kids were singing it, who made it, Primary 7 in East Plain, Primary. And that's just, East Plain is known as the Plain, because it was the model village plain, because it was built as a model village, a model of how to build housing for the miners. And it was the red rose, which are so typical and we see in so many places, but they were proud of it, and it's still referred to as the Plain. But I just want to play you again, My Dad Coughs All Night, and just have a think about, don't worry about the words. The words are there on page 292 of the book, if you've got the copy to hand just now. But it's the way that they get into the singing of it, and the sound of it, the cough, and the sigh, and the crash, and the groan, and the hack of the sound. Their idea. I wouldn't do that. I would just sing, and I'd say, well, people might laugh if you hear about coughing in the middle of it. But no, that was them turning it into their idea of the song. So we'll see if we can find it. And I'm sorry about the problem I've been having with the numbers.
Here come the car.
Yeah, again, that's a different one again.
Here.
I'll never find these songs. I do not know what's going on here. Every number's wrong.
My dad coughs all night. Wakes me up when he starts. Black lung disease. My dad coughs all night. say, Grandad fell one day, ow! My doll works very hard. She cooks and cleans and she washes her clothes and hangs them in the back that green red rose. My mom works very hard. My sister works at the table, crash! She picks out the coal and she's got a bad back. Stone has her fingers and her nails turn black. My sister works at the table, crash! My auntie pushes a horse. All the way to the top of the bend, she cries going up and down she sings. My auntie pushes a hutch. My brother hews the coal, hack. Something has put the toes into his eyes, but he hasn't been bit, so he never cries. My brother hews the coal, hack. My daddy coughs all night. He wakes me up when he starts to wheeze. He says he's got black lung disease. My dad coughs all night.
So I want to say thank you to Cisco, who helped me to the money to create these books and give out free copies and vend them. And the ones which we don't dish out today, I'm going to send to the various mining welfares all around the country. And to Arthur and the various team who helped me to do these workshops in schools. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ewan, for organising all that for us and for all the hard work with the school kids.
It was fun, you can tell.
Weren't they terrific, the kids, and the music? Absolutely, you know, amazing. Amazing. Next up is Rab Wilson, who's going to read some of his poetry to us. Rab was a miner in the 80s, Rab, finishing up in 86, 87 or so?
Yeah.
Rab's poetry will be well known to many of you. Rab's going to spend maybe 20 minutes or so, with some poetry. Thank you, Rab.
Thank you, Arthur. Hi, I'm Rab Wilson from New Cumnock in Ayrshire. And I need to apologise in advance. I've got to rush off after this spot here. I've got to get back to New Cumnock on a thing in Glasgow this evening, so I've got a bit of rushing around to do. But it's really nice to be here today, and I've really enjoyed the other presentations and the songs and the interesting talks that we've had today. And it really is a very, very worthwhile event. And having left school in New Cumnock in 76 and worked in the mining industry till 1986, and having come through the miners' strike and all that, you know, it was a world that I knew and grew up in, and it seems very, very strange to me that it has completely disappeared and that it no longer really exists in the way that it did. It kind of exists with open cast, but that's a different kind of mining and with different issues and different problems that we've seen very recently in Ayrshire, East Ayrshire, with the demise of the open cast coal mines and the problems with that. A couple of a wee story just to kick off. Working in the mining industry, it was an industry that was had a very black sense of humour, and you needed to have a very robust kind of constitution to cope with it sometimes. And I remember this story, getting told this story about a miner called, his name was George Montgomery, but he got called Angel Montgomery. All the Montgomerys were all called Angel for some reason or other, so he was Angel Montgomery. And he was a great big giant of a man, great big man. And when he worked at the coal face, he wore a vest, and he used to wear it off the shoulder. He used to put one strap over so it hung like a kind of, like Tarzan's kind of loincloth. Big Angel Montgomery, he was a great big man. And he was quite a kind of, quite a dry wit and a humour about him. And then there was an under manager at the time, his name was Montgomery, and his nickname was Chocolate. Everybody had a nickname, his name was Chocolate, Big Chocolate. And this under manager had a terrible habit of, he was quite a bit of a bully and a blustering kind of man. And when he came down to the coal face and that, all miners would be given a boy, a young boy, to kind of take through their training and their close personal supervision and the face and whatnot. And at that time, that was at a time when all miners used to drink bottles of water, but the young boys were drinking diluting orange juice. This was quite a new thing. And so the young boys would have a bottle of diluting orange juice. And Big Montgomery, Big Chocolate, would come down and they would, in the face line, because he was under manager, everybody had to respect him a bit. And he would say, "You're a juice, son." And the boy would say, "Aye, need a wee mouthful of your juice." So he gave him a juice and Big Chocolate would glug, 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 and leave the boy about that in the air side of the bottle. So he was a big greedy man and nobody liked him because of this. But anyway, this face line at the time had a problem with water. Water started seeping. This was happening face lines and coal faces. There would be inrushes of water in a dry bit, and then all of a sudden water would start seeping in. And in this face line, the water became quite a problem, and it started to rise up. And eventually the men were kind of wading in through the water to work there. And it got to such a pitch that they were getting worried that they might have to shut this face line down because of the egress, ingress of water into the face line. So this day, Big Chocolate, the under manager, and the general manager, and a host of high hegians come down the pit, and you could really tell them, because they had brand new donkey jackets and lovely white muslin cheesecloth scarves on, and the brilliant white new bonnets, and there they were all gathered. And they gathered all the men round about, and they said, right boys, we need to have a meeting here. This water coming in is getting very serious, and we've brought pumps in, but they're no coping with it, and if this goes on like this, we might need to shut the face down, and we're just wondering if anybody's got any ideas here how we can cope with this water. So nothing much was said, and Big Angel Montgomery standing there with his Tarzan cement on, and he just, his horn slowly goes up in the air, and Chocolate says, "Yes, George," because he called him George, and Angel didn't like that. He liked to be called Angel, but he was whining out. He said, "Yes, George." He says, "Aye," he says, "I've got a solution." Now, I'll give you a warning just for the recording. There's an expletive coming up here. Because unbelievably, expletives in bad language were occasionally heard in the back. So, anyway, "Yes, George, what is it?" He says, "Aye," he says, "I've got an idea." He says, "Well, what is it? Let's hear it. We're all interested to hear. See if we can save this face line. Keep the work going." "Aye," he says, "well, you can see that young boy there." "Aye." He says, "well, you could send him up the cage and send him into Auchinleck to the cooperative. And he could buy a big gallon, 5-litre bottle of diluted orange. And then he can bring it back here." And he's looking at Big Chocolate. He says, "You bring it back here, and we could pour it into this water here, and you could fucking drink it." And I just love that story. I just love that story. It just so epitomises the humour of the pits for me. It really is a beautiful story, absolutely true. And disabilities and things in the pits. You know, I can remember my Uncle Jimmy, who was a wee man from Newcastle, Durham way. My granny was from down that earth and had somehow met my grandfather who belonged to New Cumnock, and they got married. And my Uncle Jimmy, her brother, had worked in the pits, and he came up and he became famously known in New Cumnock because he had a wee fruit and veg business. And he was Jimmy the Fruiter. Jimmy Forster was his name. Great Border's name. So he was Jimmy the Fruiter, and Uncle Jimmy had two fingers missing in his hand like that, and they said that he lost these. It was a folly of stone for the roof had come down and taken these two fingers off, and apparently he was given the princely sum of £4 for this, and allegedly he was back at his work the next day losing two fingers. So he had this hand that was like that, Jimmy the Fruiter at New Cumnock, famous character. And this was quite a benefit to Jimmy the Fruiter, because come Halloween time, when you're going to the fruit and veg van and getting buying your monkey nuts, so the monkey nuts would sit at the front of the van in a great big basket, and the wains would say, can I get a bag of monkey nuts, Mr. Foster? Aye, no problem, I'll fill you a big bag. And of course, he would hear his bad horn in the bag, and he would be scooping them in. But of course, we were only making about 3 nuts at a time because of the disability in Jimmy's horn. And he'd scoop it as if you were getting a huge portion, and you were only getting a wee drop in the earth of the bag here. Monkey nuts. So there we go, a wee story there for the pitch. So some disabilities had strange outcomes, I suppose. Strange outcomes. This is the book, the Image of God, Joe Corey's poems here. And I don't think, though, we've heard folk talking about keeping in with the gaffer, but I don't think we've actually heard it today. Have you, Ewan? Right, well, you'll have to put up with my dulcet tones, and we'll maybe give you a wee airing to Corey's. It's fine to keep in with the gaffer, because this is a hugely humorous tale of what it was like working at the pits and how workers did indeed in the face lines do their best to keep in with the chair chawn or the oversman or the deputy, you know, and some would go to great lengths. I can remember seeing a man every day would sit with split sticks, split kindling sticks, and then you would tie them into a tight bundle with some kept wire, the orange kept wire, and he would gift this to the gaffer in the face line, you know, and this was the kind of things they did in hopes to get a Saturday shift. Those were the days. So this is a Gorries, it's fine to give him the gaffer. For money a year I hae worked doon a blow, but never in bits that are wet or low. For I market my business wherever I go, aye to keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it's fine to keep in wi' the gaffer. I was nae lang started till plain I could see that some had it easy as easy could be. So I thought to mysel that the best thing for me was to try and keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it's fine to keep in wi' the gaffer. My boss at the time was a mason, ye ken. So I went to the bank for my £7.10 and bravely I bearded the goat in its den. Oh, to keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it's fine to keep in wi' the gaffer. The next shin to come was a musical horn. He stood in the middle and waggled the wand. So I learned the cornet and played in his barn. Oh, to keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it's fine to keep in wi' the gaffer. The next was a crater o' different stamp, a high-heed cadet in the Salvation Camp. So I got him to save me and carried the lamp. Oh, to keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it's fine to keep in wi' the gaffer. The next was a punter, a horse racing man, so I balked in on record and followed his plan. And I finished it up with my shirt in the pawn. Oh, to keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it's fine to keep in wi' the gaffer. To the lad wi' ambition I gie this advice, nae matter wha says, to the gaffer be nice. Just work to his orders and never think twice. For it pays to keep in wi' the gaffer. Oh, it pays to keep in wi' the gaffer. Joe Corey, I'm glad I sung that, because And I'll maybe read another here in Joe Corey's here. I mean, because he had this great sort of mining, and the great mining tradition, you know, he could mix and match humour and pathos and tragedy and mix all these things together. And I like that in writers. I think writers should write stuff that's humorous and they should write stuff that's serious as well. But humour plays a part in our lives. You know, art should be a mirror of life. It portrays tragedy and triumph and sadness and humour and these kind of things, not have a part to play. But this is in his Sadarians. It's a sonnet, and he was a great craftsman. He wrote wonderful sonnets. He was a great craftsman as a poet, and I look up to that and admire that. This one's called The Aftermath, and with the 100 years since the First World War, this is obviously a kind of a dealing with the aftermath of the First World War, and this is a mother who has lost her son. Her son's been killed in the war, and it's the effect, the toll it has taken on this woman, and it's quite a tragic poem, a wee short poem, The Aftermath. On Tuesdays, pension day, she passes hame, a frail old body, wrinkled, gay and sere. The neighbours through the curtained windows stare and watch her tap the brae. A cry in shame, you'll hear them say, she taps a hoff or twa. And side to side she gangs with drucken reel, and sometimes cursing like the very deal. Her pair deed laddies pension all awa'. The shameless bosom, so the gossip says. Although she feels about her lad to drink his pension every week, weel may she think black burning shame. They dinna see the maze she won up when the bloody guns did howl and blood ran free as water, bare all soul. Great stuff. I've got quite a collection of books at home about mining and mining history and stuff like that. And this was one I got relatively recently. Some of you may be aware of it. A Pitman's Anthology, compiled by William Morris. And William Morris was the founder of the Wolf Safety Lamp Company. And you still got Wolf equipment, yeah, Wolf drills, lawnmowers, things like that. Still a big company. He founded it. He lived from 1872 to 1951. And he was a mining engineer. And he became a very wealthy industrialist. And he compiled this fantastic book. And it's all stories and poems and bits for novels all written about the mining industry. And it is a fantastic resource. And if you want to get one book that gives you an overview of the whole mining sort of life and culture and history, then that is the book to get. William Morris's A Pitman's Anthology. A tremendous thing, it really is. And another thing I got recently again is this book, The Pitman's Requiem by Peter Crookston. Crookston was a journalist, he wrote for the Sunday Times and The Guardian, well known journalist. And this is this deals with the demise of the North East England coalfield, Ellington Collier, Easington Collier, these pits. And he charts the demise of that post the miners' strike and the effects it's had in these communities. Because if you talk about disabilities, and after a gentleman asked this morning about mental health, you know, after I left the mining industry in 86, I left the pit on the Friday, I mind the day, we all at the end of the shift, I turned my belt off, my steel bits, take up bits, and my pit helmet, and I put them together. And I went down to this thing that was called the Duck Hopper Belt. And this was this belt that went up this gantry, this conveyor belt. And it went into the duct hopper. And then this stuff was taken away to the bin. And I went there and I stood over the gantry with my bits and my helmet. And I just dropped them onto the duct hopper belt. And I watched them disappear into the conveyor. And I walked to the showers in my stoking soles. And I never went back to the pit again. And that was the end of that. And I started nursing, psychiatric nursing, on the Monday. Because I was skint after the strike and I couldn't afford to have a holiday, so I had to go straight from one job to another. But I'm one of the lucky ones, I suppose, because I've never ever been out of work a day in my life. So there'll not be many folk like that now, I suppose, and young ones, you feel sorry for them. But in that book, The Pitman's Requiem, Peter Crookston, he talks about these villages in northeast England, and you have issues regarding what the Tories and these kind of people didn't take into consideration for one instance when they shut these down was you weren't just shutting down an industry, you were destroying a community. And you destroyed it, and the results of that were things like depression and obesity and divorce and drug problems, unemployment, a whole raft of issues. That were caused by the shutting down of the mines and the coal fields, and I've seen it with my own eyes. I'll read some of them up, a few of my own poems. on at 10 minutes or so yet. And, but these were from a series of sonnets I did about the miners' strike. They were based on Joe Owens's book, Miners, A Decade of Endurance, 1984 to 1994, where he interviewed miners and women who were involved in the miners' strike, and a decade later he looked at the effects on them and their communities. And I took these stories, written in very much a kind of Scottish language, their own local dialect, and I distilled them down into sonnets for each of these folk. But I don't think I've read these in public before, because there was one guy among these names, the names of these folk, folk like young Mick McGaughey. There's Mick McGaughey's son, Mick McGaughey. There's in for him, Pat Rattray, Billy McLean, Yvonne Hodge, Danny Gemmell, Helen Gray, Dave Maguire, Alex Shanks, all these names. And I've never met one of these folk. I've wrote these poems about them, and I don't know even if they know that these poems exist about them. But I just felt really... And this was 20 years. You know, this would be more than 20 years. These have been written around about 2005, 2006, I think. It was a long time after the strike that I revisited this. And it was amazing how emotional I felt about it. It was something that had been repressed, you know, and put away. Something you didn't revisit. But this guy, some of you might know this guy, John McCormack, the Fall Inn. Did he get, was his nickname Popeye or something? Is a nickname?
Corey.
Was that his nickname? Aye. Because I had a journalist in touch with me a few months back there, Peter Ross, that writes in Scotland Sunday. He's just put a new book out called Donderlust, which is a copy of, it's just a collection of his articles and stories, and it's a tremendous read. I really recommend it to you, Donderlust by Peter Ross. And he did this really good article on 30 years anniversary of the miners' strike, and he came to New Cumnock and interviewed myself. I put him in touch with various folk that were connected with the strike doing that way. But he also visited John McCormack, who's in his 80s now. I've never met the man. Would have liked to have met the man. Peter says he's failing a wee bit now, though, which is sad, but he's getting on. But this was his story, and I liked his story that much that I wrote 5 sonnets for him that tell his story from when he left the skill to when he left to the pits shut. So I'll just read these, because these are a tribute to a real, you know, a real miner who, in every sense of that phrase, you know, he worked in the mines all his days. He was a strong member of his community, he was a strong member of the union, and he had the sort of principles that are so sadly lacking in public life now. So this is John McCormack Fallon, 1. I left school at 15 on a Friday. Nae exams then, or only palaver. If the surface foreman kent your father, that was you. I stared it in the Monday. Fall Inn has always been a village pit. Here in the village, Paul Mays 3 and 4, a tunnel linking up 4 down the blow, Paul Mays 1 and 2, down the road a bit. For 4 or 5 years I done surface work, then on-course jobs till I done my training, then constant backshift, because I was playing football at weekends, signed up with Falkirk. I played professional for 8 seasons, when we won the cup in 57. 2. In they days, we'd all come home frae the pit, and we're working clays, and your een were black. We'd stop at the welfare to hear the crack, and each one of us still had own were bits. The place I worked was a 4-away run. We'd folk the Germans, and the joke get told that knew we were trying to steal their coal. With a 4-mile hike, it wasn't much fun. Our jackets were off the top of the brae, stripped down to our trousers, bits and knee pads. I'm telling you, friend, the heat was that bad. Extra water got sent down every day. I grew rich scunnocked round about that time. Nearly giant the air me to quit the mine. 3. I became the union delegate. At the skill, I like to see fair play. I feel the same way to this very day. Held the post till the pit met out the gate. We'd hit this fault afore the miners' strike. We said we'd drive through it to hit the coal, but Wheeler just wanted us in the dole. Even though we turned down our bonus like, the men were desperate for the place to go. In June 83, things came to a peak. He locked all the miners out for 5 weeks. We won a tribunal, though, and our dole. 5 weeks back pay was paid out in our horn. Wheeler was not a very happy man. 4. Within 4 weeks, the fault had been driven. Hit coal that was 6 feet high all the way. But 300 men were paid off next day, depriving all the men who were leaving, an act of industrial villainy. When they folk were falling, they shut the pit. A place that had 20 years' work in it. They needed the money for the barony. We met in the welfare, made out a list. The manager's office was my next stop. He said, "You're for the big ship lollipop." He meant I was out and wouldn't be missed. George Bolton said, "Sort it out for yourself." The show was by. I should have kent myself. 5. After the strike, I was lost for a while. Knew a full forms in for boys in the dole. Helped widows with pensions claim for their coal. You'll still see me going through Falkirk's turnstiles. My plane's awed in for the terracing now. I went up to Timex to check out the facts. Never said I'm a miner. If they ask, I say I'm for Stirling, just passing through. I feel different now, like I've lost something. Can't I put my finger on what it is? I think it's a pit that I really miss. And memories of it seem to bring a burst of laughter for the good old days. And the grief and anger just fade away. John McCormick. And these things, I mean, even down our way in the local press and the local papers, there's stories surface about today with the pits and the miners. And I say with the First World War thing, this is a story about a guy called Wally Jackson. It's a picture of the guy in his uniform in the First World War. And he worked in the pits and he went and fought in the war. And he was awarded the DCM, Distinguished Conduct Medal, which was the highest honour for a soldier in the ranks. And then he came back, and then he died in 1943 in a roof fall. During the Second World War, he was back, he was working in the pits, and he was killed in a roof fall in the pits. So this was a story just in the Cumnock Chronicle just last week. So there's echoes for the coal fields still resound locally for us the day down in Ayrshire. And a thing that's coming up on the Saturday the 5th of July, if you're doing Sanker Way, Sanker's got a lovely arts centre, and they're going to be showing the film The Brave Don't Cry. And this was the film that was made in 1952 that relates to the Knockshinnagh disaster in New Cumnock. And apparently there's a new digital remastered restored version of this just been made available, so and you can get a copy of it. It doesn't say in the film that it's about Knockshinnagh, but it is about Knockshinnagh, and I've seen a rough version of the film. I'm very much looking forward to seeing this. It's a free event on the 5th of July at Sanker, so if you feel like it, make your way down. You'll be made welcome. And they're also showing a short 30 minute documentary about the Gresford disaster that happened in 1934, where more than 200 miners were killed. So that's happening in Sanker on Saturday the 5th of July in the afternoon, if anybody fancies it. I'll finish with one more poem. And I say, it's been really nice to come here, and this is such a great place, and this is such a great space to read in. It's so important to get the right space to read poetry and perform songs and music in. And this has been really, really good today. So in this, my last collection, A Map for the Blind, I did a series of poems in it related to coal mining. And yeah, I'll maybe finish with this in there. And this is a poem in blank verse. It was written about the Nakshinak disaster. I made a film which I showed up here a couple of years ago about a poetry led film about the mining industry in our area called Finding the Seam. And this poem is written, as I say, about the Nakshinak disaster. And when you go up to the Afton Cemetery up the Afton Valley, where Burns wrote Sweet Afton, the graveyard there's a section out where all the people that were killed in the Nakshinak disaster all kind of lie together there in this one area of the cemetery. And again you see killed in Nakshinak, killed at Nakshinak in these gravestones. It's a very poignant place. And there's a memorial there too, just across the way where the actual cave-in happened. And mining disasters aren't called disasters for nothing, because there usually are a disaster where everyone in that is killed. So it's very, very rare when you get a mining disaster where the majority of the people are saved, or even some of the people are saved. And Nakshinak is quite unique in that, and that 129 men were involved in it and trapped underground, and they managed with this miraculous rescue attempt, very similar to the Chile event a few years back. They managed by a miraculous means to get the majority of these men out, but 13 of them died in the disaster. And I'll finish with this one. Thanks very much for inviting me up here today. Disaster. The 7th of September 1950, the legend etched on these worn marble headstones, Nakshinak, Nakshinak, Nakshinak. When the world's inn briefly licked its own new Cumnock, 129 men were entombed when one inrush of glory swept through the pit. The heroic rescue attempt that followed, that saved almost them all, but these 13. Stories haunted down the local courage. Men were roped like sticks to save their friends. Brent new ropes with 10-ton breaking strains were snapped like thread, behaving desperate horns. Folk drove themselves ayont all human limits. The photos in the archives at the Baird show silent, waiting croods with fearful faces, fathers, mothers, daughters, wives and sons, their shawls and bonnets of another age that kent gie weel the price for what coals won. For gied thanks for the men who all got rescued, but wouldna leave the others in that place. They won their men folk back, aye, every one. So now these comrades lig here all together in this safe build among the braes o' hame. Sleep soon, the dark is ever. You've earned your rest. Thank you very much.